Welcome to Lesson 2 in our study of the Book of Daniel as a part of the Prophecy Series. Today, we're going to begin looking at the text of Daniel. And as we begin to get into Daniel chapter 1 today, I want to just point out a couple of things to you to help you to kind of understand where we're going with our study of these various books as we are approaching the Prophecy Series. First of all, it's typical for most of us to just want to know, give us the facts, tell me what the passages say so I can understand the future. So we want to just examine the prophetic passages. But when you come to a book like Daniel, it offers a whole lot more than just the prophetic passages. In fact, when you look at Daniel, especially the first six chapters, you're going to see some historical narratives, which sadly we've reduced down to just a series of stories that we tell typically in Sunday school, to special children's Sunday school, where we say things like, dare to be a Daniel. Well, the reality is yes, we can draw some moral lessons from Daniel's life from these chapters, but they are historical narratives to fill in the gaps of why we see these prophetic visions happening and what their meaning is, and what their meaning is especially to Daniel and the Jews of that time who would be reading them. So we're looking at the text to find out exactly what's going on so we can have a better understanding of the prophetic text when we come to them. The second thing I want to point out is that we're going to use the literal method of interpretation when we look at this book. We're going to basically look at what is the plain meaning of the text in light of its grammatical and its historical background so that we can understand what the text is saying. So let's begin. And today we're going to focus in lesson 3 on the preparation of Daniel and his friends. And we're going to be focusing on Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 21. So when we come to verses 1 through 7 of chapter 1, what we see there is a description of Daniel's deportation. Now, what do you mean deportation, George? Well, Daniel was born in the province, or the kingdom of Judah, possibly from Jerusalem, and he was deported. He was taken away. And so this is what is described in these first seven verses. So let's take a look at the passage. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of royal family and of nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance, skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of food that the king ate, and of the wine that he drank, and they were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. Now, let's get into the passage itself. So we're going to talk, what we see in verse 1 to 2 is the defeat of Judah. So the events took place in the third year of Jehoiakim's reign, which was 605 BC. Now, if you remember, after the death of King Josiah, there were a series of kings, quick series of kings, they were brothers, they were relatives, that happened in the kingdom of Judah based upon how many times they were defeated, either by the Egyptians or by the Babylonians. And so what we see here is that during the reign of Jehoiakim, in 605 BC, we see the final deportation of the people, the final defeat, the destruction of the temple, the destruction of Jerusalem, and the carrying away, the final carrying away of the people into exile. Nebuchadnezzar lay siege to Jerusalem with his Babylonian armies. And I've given you now a map to show you the extent of the Babylonian kingdom, the Babylonian Empire, I should say, in 539 BC. Now, I want you to take a moment to take a look at where certain things are located. So, of course, we know where Jerusalem is located. We understand where Tyre, which is along the sea in what is now modern-day Lebanon. Of course, Damascus we're familiar with, and Haran to the north is where Abraham with his family first went before he would proceed down to Canaan. And then I want you to notice there, if you follow the Euphrates River there, you're going to see Babylon. Now, I need you to understand, because this is very important when you understand what Daniel and his friends went through, the Babylonians wouldn't just come straight west to Jerusalem. There is a vast desert there. It would make no sense. But what they would do is they would follow the Fertile Crescent. That is, they would follow the river up to Haran, then come down towards Damascus, Tyre, then to Jerusalem. Now, when you're taking exiles, these are people who are taken captive, taken away from their families, either their families have been destroyed and so forth. They're going to be taken and they're going to follow that same journey. However, in reverse, they're going to go back up the Fertile Crescent and then down the Euphrates to Babylon. And so that is the journey that Daniel and his friends would have to take as captives, as exiles to Babylon. In fact, that is the journey that all of the Jews who were taken into exile would have to face. So the writer records that God allowed Nebuchadnezzar to defeat Jehoiakim. So God is the one who allowed Judah to be destroyed. So the Babylonians took some of the temple treasures to the house of his God. Now, this is a typical thing that invading armies would do. If your army defeats the army of another kingdom, that's basically your God defeating their God. And so therefore, what you would do is you would take the plunder, especially from their temple, and bring it back and place it in the temple of your God. And that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did. So at this point, what's left in the temple? It doesn't say anything about the significant things of the temple, such as the ark or the table of showbread or any of those furniture pieces from the temple that are significant. What it talks about is simple vessel treasures that were placed in the temple, especially since the time of Solomon, and they were brought into the house of Nebuchadnezzar's God. Now, these vessels will play a part later when we get to chapter 5 of Daniel. But at this point, the text wants to tell us that these vessels were taken to the land of Babylon. Now, when we get to verses 3 through 5, we're going to see that with regards to some of these exiles, some of these captives who were taken, Nebuchadnezzar gives some instruction. So Nebuchadnezzar commanded that young Jewish princes would be taken for service. So notice that. He's asking that from the royalty, that is the royal family, and from the nobility of Judah, there would be certain young men who would basically meet certain qualifications, look good, think, show some ability as far as their mind, and they would be brought into service. Now you're saying to yourself, why them? Well, because these folks would be the ones who, in Jewish culture or any culture, would be educated. Do you have to understand? There's not a system of mass education in these ancient empires. But those who would probably be educated would be those from a royal household or those who would be of nobility. So these young men must be good looking and possess the ability to learn. So this was basically the category of what they had to do. They would study the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. Now, let me explain to you. When we talk about the Chaldeans, when you look at the Babylonians, basically there are the Babylonians and the Chaldeans. The Chaldeans were viewed as a more higher, more educated group, and so their language and their teaching came from the Chaldeans. And so basically they would be studying the literature and the writings and the language of the elite in Babylonian society. So the king provided food and wine for the young men. So basically what he's doing here is from his own resources and his own allotment that he has as a king, he is providing the food and the drink that is necessary for them in their training. Now you're saying, why wine? Well, unlike today, where we have water that is comes right to our house through pipes, they don't drink the water. It's not necessarily healthy to drink water. They drink wine. And I think we understand that when we talk about the ancient world. Now, they would enter the king's service after 3 years of training. So I think that's significant. I think that's something you and I need to understand, that this is a 3-year process. Now, let me just stop for a moment. I want you to reflect for a moment, because sometimes in our retelling of these stories, they become so sterile in our thinking, we don't really understand what it was like for those who are going through this. So you're talking about Jewish young men who have been uprooted from their home, taken into captivity, stripped from their families, made this long journey along the Fertile Crescent back to Babylon. Then they are selected to become servants to the king, and they have to undergo a 3-year process and to begin eating foreign food, Babylonian food. Now, the text doesn't say that, but the implication is pretty clear, that they probably were also made eunuchs. That is, they were probably castrated. And being that they were placed into the care of the chief of eunuchs, and it would be the eunuchs who would be basically helping the king in his service and administrating the state. Now you say, why do you say eunuchs? Well, I think it's interesting that when you read about Daniel, nowhere do you ever see anything about him having a family or a wife. So just letting you know that, so you could see the trauma that is going on of young men who are then forced into 3 years of training. Now, when you think of that, it's probably of the exiles and all that they're enduring going to a foreign land, probably he's in a better situation than most. Now, let's talk about Daniel and his friends. We see this in verses 6 through 7. So the writer provides the Jewish names for Daniel and his friends. Now, when you go to verse 6, you see that it lists the Jewish names. Now, I think it's very interesting. We tend to focus on their Babylonian names. So the writer provides the Babylonian names for Daniel and his friends. I think it's interesting that when we refer to Daniel's friends, we always refer to them by their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But when you look at the text itself, and it refers to the friends later on, especially when we come to chapter 2, you're going to see that the text itself refers to them by their Jewish names. We have a tendency to refer to them by their Babylonian names. We do the reverse, though, with Daniel. With Daniel, we focus on his Jewish name. We don't refer to Daniel by his Babylonian name. And again, we see this when you look at verse 7, you see both names being presented. Verse 6 was the list of the Jewish names of his friends. Verse 7, notice what it says, and the chief of eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. So these are the names that we see with reference to the Jewish friends. Now, when we get to chapter 1, verses 8 through 16, we're going to see Daniel's devotion to God. Now, I think this is significant. So think about all of the experience that Daniel has gone through up until this point. Being stripped from his family, watching where he is, his homeland, the city, probably Jerusalem, that he was born in, being destroyed, the temple being destroyed, being made to make that long journey from Jerusalem, from Judah, all the way over to Babylon along the Fertile Crescent, being placed into service, now having to eat foreign food brought from the king's house, and yet he remains faithful to God. I think there's a lesson there for us. So let's take a look at verses 8 through 16. Here's what the scripture text says. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of eunuchs. And the chief of eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who assigns your food and your drink. For why should he see that you are in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king? Then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days, and let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter, and he tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. Now, let's take a look at this section. So first of all, we're going to notice in verse 8 the request that Daniel is making. Daniel determined not to defile himself with Babylonian food. So obviously Daniel here has a sense of what the Old Testament Mosaic law called for in the avoidance of certain foods to make him unclean or defiled. So here he determines that he is not going to defile himself with the Babylonian food. So he makes his request to the chief of eunuchs. So rather than just deciding, he probably didn't have the ability to decide to eat on his own or provide for him, he goes right to the chief of eunuchs and he makes a request. Now, when we get to verses 9 through 14 of chapter 1, we see that the request is granted. So God moved the heart of the chief eunuch to show favor and goodwill to Daniel. So God moved the heart. God was the one who's in control, and he gave favor with the chief eunuch towards Daniel. However, even though the eunuch has a favorable disposition towards Daniel, there is a fear, and it's expressed here in the text. He was concerned that he would suffer if Daniel did not thrive physically. In fact, the text tells you that it threatened his head, meaning he would be killed if he didn't carry out the king's command and feed these young men from the food from the king's table. So Daniel is in a situation where the eunuch says, I want to help you, but the reality is, if you don't look good, if you don't do well like the others, I'm going to be killed. So Daniel proposed a test period of 10 days with a certain diet to his friends. So again, he's saying to the steward, look, you just feed us the things that we recommend and check us out. In fact, at the end of the test period, they should be compared with those who eat the king's food. So compare us. See what we're talking about. Let's do this for 10 days. So the text tells us that because he has favor with the steward, guess what? The steward agreed and tested them for 10 days. Now, when we get to verses 15 and 16 of chapter 1, we're going to see the result of this test. So the text moves on and it says that at the end of 10 days, because they've been given vegetables, they've been given water to drink, at the end of 10 days, Daniel and his friends were in better condition than the others. That's amazing, isn't it? Well, obviously, God was favoring them. The steward then, seeing this, replaced the king's food with the Jewish diet. He basically gave them the vegetables that they were asking. So again, here's what happens. They are now no longer defiling themselves according to the Mosaic law because they've been given vegetables to eat. So then we come to the issue of Daniel's appointment in verse 17 through 21 of chapter 21. And what we're going to see now is the result that happens when they appear before the king. So here's what the text says in verse 17. As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. At the end of the time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none were found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. Now, let's examine what the text is saying. So first of all, let's talk about their progress. We see that in chapter 1, verse 17. And what we're going to notice here is what God has blessed them with. So the text is telling us that God endowed Daniel and his friends with knowledge and wisdom. The source of their knowledge and wisdom, the text is telling you and I, is from God. Now, with regards to Daniel, he was given another ability from the Lord. God gave Daniel an understanding concerning all visions and dreams. He gave him an understanding concerning all visions and dreams. Now, all right, let's stop for a moment. Remember what I said when we were approaching the text. Why is it important that you and I have an understanding of what's going on with these historical narratives before we get right into the prophetic text? What we see from this first chapter is how they got in this situation of Babylon, what they went through that's inferred by the text to get them there. And then we see at the end of chapter 1 here that the text is very clearly telling us that God gave Daniel a unique ability that was separate even from his friends. For all of them, he gave them wisdom and understanding. But with Daniel, he gives him an understanding concerning visions and dreams. That should remind us of someone else from Israel's history, right? Who else was given the ability to understand dreams that you know of? Well, if you go all the way back to the book of Genesis, there was one who was given the ability to understand dreams because God gave him the ability to do that, and that was Joseph. Here we see Daniel has been given this ability. Now, in verses 18 through 20, we see their appearance before the king. So again, after the three-year period of training, remember the king told the chief of the eunuchs that you are to bring them before me for me to examine them. So probably they brought all of these young men in after the 3 years of training to be examined by the king. So at the end of their training, they appeared before the king. That must have been quite a spectacular sight, but probably also a very intense, traumatizing thing for these young men to appear before this ruler who has the power of the sword. So the king interviewed them and found them superior to others. So he interviewed Daniel and his friends and found them to be way superior to the others that were there. And again, we understand why that is. If we go to the prior verse, we see that God gave them a spirit of wisdom and understanding, and he gave Daniel the ability to interpret dreams. So then when we come to verse 21, we see the length of Daniel's service in Babylon. So the text tells us that Daniel served in Babylon until the first year of Cyrus's reign, which was 539 BC, a total of about 66 years. Now you say, why until the first year of Cyrus's reign? Well, in the first year of Cyrus the Great's reign, he defeats Babylon. So basically, from that point with King Nebuchadnezzar, basically around 602 BC, if you figure 3 years of training, or 601 BC, up until the point of 539 BC, he's been serving there about 66 years. That is a long time for a servant to the kings of Babylon. And that brings us to the end of our study in chapter 1.